Hey guys, it is Mina. On today's episode, Ryan Clark and I are going to talk about the latest CBA goings-ons and some of the teams that could be big spenders in free agency. Subscribe to the podcast so you can get new episodes as soon as they are posted. Rate us 5 stars. Leave a review. Good one. Before we get to today's episode, I want to tell you about That's What She Said with Sarah Spain. This week, Sarah speaks with two leaders in the Chicago community who are trying to change the face of education and the ways we deal with poverty and crime affecting our young people. You can find That's What She Said wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to the Meaning Time Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts hears the name Chase Young and thinks, that's what I like to do at the dog park. That's Lenny. He loves chasing after puppies. Speaking of puppies, speaking of dogs, I'm joined today by a guest I've been dying to have back. Everybody loved him, but he's so busy and so popular, it's been almost impossible to book him. And yet,
he found the time
for us amidst all of the crazy NFL news. Ryan Clark, welcome back to the podcast.
All I want to know, Mina, is the next time I see you and I say hello, that you're going to say hello back.
I can't promise that. I can't promise
All right.
that. I can't promise that.
Well, see, that's tough. That's tough. But let's get it going.
You have one of my all-time favorite. You know I love, like, descriptions of things. And you have one of my all-time favorite descriptions when you said RG3 reminded you of a mouse trying to hang on to a motorcycle. It's, like, the weirdest description I've ever heard. But it's also the most accurate. Like, that should, you know, like, scouting reports? Like, that's the kind of thing I want to see on scouting reports. Because it was just so spot on. Ryan, every time I see him now, like on TV, he was on First Take, I think about that.
Well, I think that's the most descriptive and accurate description I could have given. Because I just remember being on the sideline and waiting for the accident or waiting for the mouse to jump off of the motorcycle. And you always know, too, because mice are small, that if they come off of a motorcycle, it's going to be a catastrophic landing on the ground. And every time RG3 hit the ground when I was with him, I thought he was hurt. And that was what it seemed like. And my DB coach at the time, Raheem Morris, we would always say that to each other, and he'd get going, and he'd just look at me and go, ah, because we knew eventually he was going to have to jump off the motorcycle, and it was going to be bad for everybody wearing burgundy and gold.
I don't think a mouse has ever been on a motorcycle. That's the thing. Like, you just pulled that out. I don't know what. Like, it's not like a thing that, like, comes to your mind. And yet, it does make a lot of sense. RG3 has been kind of spicy online with all the CBA stuff. I don't know if you've seen some of his tweets. He's kind of out there. He's like, you know, Ryan, okay, well, I promise we're not going to talk about RG3 a long time, but, like, he's really sort of reached, I think, a point in his career where maybe, certainly not back in 2013, we would have ever thought coming, which is he's kind of like an elder statesman, right? Like, he's just like the solid backup journeyman quarterback, and I don't think we would have seen that for him.
No, I don't think anybody saw that his rookie year, for sure. You think about who he was coming out of Baylor after winning the Heisman and having such a great year under the Shanahans early. You expected RG3, at least to me, you would think he'd be in the Lamar Jackson place. And obviously Lamar got there extremely early, winning the MVP in his second year. But we thought RG3 was going to revolutionize the game the way that Lamar has. And you look at what his projections of growth could have been. We expected him to be an MVP, a Super Bowl winner, a perennial Pro Bowler. And it just never really materialized, I think, because of injuries and because of some other things. But now he's like the grizzly gray-haired backup who people look to for wisdom. And I don't know if I ever thought he'd be that guy, the guy that speaks out about things about the CBA, the guy that actually, you know, puts his face out in front of some of his thoughts that could be controversial to some.
Yeah, I kind of like it, honestly. Like, it kind of makes me happy. Like, when I saw my First Take, I was like, pleased to see him there. I want to talk to you about the CBA stuff first. And then the second half of the show, we're going to talk about free agency. But last week with Greg Rosenthal, I talked about sort of the biggest names out there, some of the targets. But this week I want to talk about the teams with the most money, just like the five teams with that could be the biggest spenders. I mean, the Colts could have been last year and they weren't. So I want to get to that. But first I want to talk about the CBA stuff with you. It's a bit of a moving target, but I know you were a player rep, right? Is that am
yeah, I was on
under
the executive committee?
On the on the executive committee. Okay, so this must be.
I didn't win presidency though. I lost. Well, ran and I lost.
Who did you lose to?
Eric Winston, who definitely was a better president than I would have been.
Who's been president since then,
mm-hmm.
or until literally today? So we're recording this on Tuesday. J.C. Treader won the election. The center for the Browns, right?
Off yep.
The
top? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
When I saw the news, I also saw, I was like, oh, okay, you know, I mean, I like Mike Thomas. I was like, kind of, I don't know. And then I saw he studied industrial labor relations in college. So he seems qualified for the job. J.C. Treader does.
No, absolutely. And listen, this isn't necessarily a job that you want.
Mm.
Being the president of the NFLPA is a thankless job. It's not a job that I think many people seek, and it's also not a job that necessarily people feel good about you and tell you how great of a job you're doing when you're actually volunteering your time to speak and to sit in places and to negotiate on behalf of some of these players or many of them that you don't know. And I think when Eric was picked, it was the right decision. He was very organized. He had a great plan. He presented well to both players and ownership and NFL executives. And I think they've done the same thing this time. And getting someone with that type of background, that type of experience, that type of education, that type of knowledge is needed when you're going into negotiations, when you could be locked out, when there could be a strike. And so I think the players are doing their best to set themselves up in position to fight this fight or whatever is to come in the future.
Well, you make a good point, which is it's a second job. And I think one thing, I said this on High Noon today with Bo, like two things I think have really come out of all this drama, and it is drama. Like we got players going at it on Twitter, you know, saying what they think, coming out against it, coming out for it. I mean, it's been civil, but there's obviously a lot of dissent. I think two things, Ryan, have become clear. One, there's a lot of players learning about this information in real time, right? Who have not, mm-hmm. this has not been, not only is this obviously not, they maybe weren't as involved in the union, but I think many of them had no idea, one, this was coming down the pike, and two, which of the various issues were at stake. And that's why some of them were even trying to change their votes as the deadline kept getting pushed back to Saturday. That's the current deadline. The other thing that I think we, as like people who talk about the NFL and watch it, have learned is this is a very hard union to organize. Like, the union has gotten so much crap over the last 10 years for being weak. People are like, oh, why don't you go get 50% or get guaranteed salaries? You want to know why? Because half of these players are on entirely different career tracks from half. Some are thinking long term. So, like, you know, you've got your Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson's of the world saying, you know, fight for the future generation. 60% of the NFL does not give a shit. Like, they're just trying to get paid the minimum. So I think that's become very apparent as we've seen this sort of fracture in the player base.
Yeah, you know, and being an executive throughout the first negotiations or throughout the negotiations a decade ago, you know, you felt that. There are players who are in different positions. And, you know, I've kind of been in many different places. I was an undrafted free agent. I was a guy who was cut after his second year. I was a second year, you know, I was a second contract starter, Pro Bowler. So I've been in all these different places. And when these things were getting negotiated, I was an established veteran. I was willing to miss games. I was willing to sit out.
Yeah.
And then you had different guys who weren't in that same place. And so in trying to keep all of these people on the same path, and keep everyone informed, it's extremely difficult. But what I can say is if you are a player and you are surprised by this, then you've had your head stuck into the sand. Even as early as this offseason, before the championship games, I was flown out to California to speak to the young leadership in the NFL amongst the players. And I told them that this would be coming. I told them that they would be hearing information from whether it be reporters, if it's ESPN, if it's NFL Network, Pro Football Talk, you're going to hear all of these people who will be getting fed information. And so if you aren't tapped in, if you aren't talking to your representative, if you aren't talking to your player liaisons, you're going to be finding these things out and trying to be reactionary. And that's not where you want to be as a collective union or group. And I feel like many of the players are there. And then now that you have this vote, they're trying to collect information as fast as possible, when really it's only 32 owners on the other side that have to be together against thousands of players. And I believe that's an advantage. It's also an advantage when billionaires are going up against, and what in many cases are thousandaires, they definitely have an advantage there as well.
Well, let's talk about the deal really quickly that's on the table. You know, I've talked about it from a football perspective, but, you know, as a former union guy and former player, I'd love to hear kind of what you think of it, just to summarize it for people who mercifully have not heard this regurgitated over and over and over again. Increasing the season to 17, that would kick in not next season, expanding the playoffs this season to 14 games. I've talked about both those things, again, from a football perspective. Players would get an uptick in their revenue share that could go a little bit higher with a media. It could go as high as 48.8% with a, quote-unquote, media kicker. And then there's a bunch of small things that would affect a lot of people: minimum salaries going up, practice squads expanding, active game day rosters expanding too. That actually has football ramifications that are interesting. What's your take on all of this? Like, how, what do you think about it in terms of being a good deal for the players?
I think it's what negotiations seem to be, and what they usually are if they're competitive negotiations, that each side is getting some of the things that they want. Nobody or no one is getting everything that they want. And I believe based off of where you are in your career, you see it a certain way. Ramon Foster, who's a really good friend of mine still, Pittsburgh Steelers, he's their representative. And, you know, I was talking to your producer when I called. I was like, I'm sorry, man, I'm a little late. I was training people, but I gave him a call and I put him on FaceTime, and I'm sitting there with, you know, Landon Collins and Lonnie Johnson, and I'm having him run through the CBA, the positives and the negatives. And from his standpoint, he felt like there were increases in many of the places that we needed to, that would help the players as a whole. And there were still some things you were going to give up. I know a big thing that was holding some people back was some of the veteran guys wanted the off season to be shorter. They wanted less work if they were going to add games. And so there are going to be some of those things. I believe the uptick in revenue and overall revenue being shared is a good thing. I believe splitting and getting an opportunity to have the TV money work in increments as it increases also helps. But I think, you know, when you look at 17 games, even though there's an uptick in minimum salary, there's an uptick in practice squad, I believe a lot of players are against that. You look at maybe and possibly expanding the playoffs. I talked about the pros and cons from a football perspective of being of more teams or another team having an opportunity to win it, of guys who are on the bottom pay scale getting an extra check, but you also add that extra game. And so I think in a lot of ways it's a win for the players, but if you're going to win at any time, you're going to have to give some things up, and the owners are asking for very specific things in order to give the players what they desire. And I think that's the holdup with the players. Mm-hmm. It's that some of them feel there is no give on what the owners want in return.
Yeah. Interesting. I mean, you're being subtle and you're saying this is not a win-lose. Like, this is a, different players will win, different players will lose. Nobody's going to be happy. There's just no situation here in which everybody's happy. And I think that's pretty obvious. I do want to get your take on the football stuff. I know I said I've been talking about it. So I'll tell you my, what I've been saying kind of, again, just about, we're setting aside, like, is this good for the players? Just talking about, is it good for football, period. I think the expanded playoff is fine. I know people are pointing to last year and saying, oh, we would have gotten Duck Hodges against Patrick Mahomes. Although this is a good defense. But by and large, Ryan, when I've looked at the last few years, actually the 14th teams have been, quote-unquote, 13th seed, right, has been pretty good. It's usually a weak division winner. I think that's fine. I do worry about the 17 game having an impact on football, because it just increases the likelihood of stars getting hurt ahead of the playoffs. What do you think about both of those things?
I mean, you look at the playoffs, I think it's always interesting, and would be fun if you're a player and you get a chance. If you are that last team to get in when you wouldn't have, stupidly, you're going to believe you have a chance. Stupidly, your fans are going to believe the same thing. So I believe it will add that excitement. I agree with you on the 17th game. It also seems kind of like a nightmare to schedule. Somebody has to get an extra home game, or they have to figure out a way to deal with that. And also, we look at the way the league works. Teams that are clinched for playoff spots, they begin to rest their players. So if a team has clinched 2 to 3 weeks out in those 16th and 17th games, are we watching backup players play the majority of those games? So where you basically do get your extra preseason game at the end of the season. And so I think there are a ton of things to work out. I understand the revenue possibilities for the league and for the owners and why they would want that. And so, like, you see the pros on their side, but as a player, I wouldn't want to play an extra game. I'm going to be honest. I thought 16 was a lot, and I believe it's very difficult to get through a 16-game season. And we've also seen seasons, Mina, when you lose stars, when teams, when the Pittsburgh Steelers, who, like you said, they had a phenomenal defense. If that team gets in because of how well that defense played and how Mike Tomlin got them to compete, are we excited about seeing Duck Hodges against Patrick Mahomes? You know, I don't believe we are. How do we build it up? You know, are you going to be on the podcast saying, man, we know Duck Hodges can't really play, but it's going to be exciting to watch that defense play Patrick Mahomes. And so I think there's so much that goes into it, but I do believe what we're learning, and I can be honest and say I don't keep up with ratings. So I don't know how the XFL is rating, but I know people clamor for more football.
Oh, yeah, please. Anyone complaining about the expanded playoffs is going to watch every freaking second of it.
Absolutely. And so I think from that perspective, it would still be a win for the NFL.
I will say, if something we have seen in the past is when quarterbacks get hurt, I think that hits ratings a lot. You know, the year it was, the year NFL ratings, they started going down. It was after Colin Kaepernick began his protest, and that was used as an explanation or a cudgel, you know, when the ratings were going down. But in fact, well, I've written about this at length, a lot of it had to do with cable news rising and the election and Trump and stuff that. But also, a lot of it was because Aaron Rodgers was hurt. Like, two or three quarterbacks in big markets were hurt ahead of the playoffs, and I think you really saw ratings suffer. Like, people do not want to watch bad quarterbacks. So I think that would be the only counter with the 17 games. Again, if you're risking quarterbacks getting hurt, I feel like there should be an all-time quarterback rule where, like, if you're on a crappy team or, like, you're like Matt Stafford and then, like, okay, you get to the postseason, like, one team gets an all-time quarterback. You know what I'm saying? Like,
so you get to draft Matt?
Yeah, you get a draft. Yeah, you get a draft and then they get an they don't have to play, but they can get paid. I don't know. I got to think through this a little bit more. You mentioned increasing revenue. I do want to mention that because the upshot of all the CBA uncertainty is no NFL team knows what they're doing right now. Because the cap's going to go up to about $200 million, but with the expanded playoff next year, it could go up even more. And then, Ryan, you know, like, the tag got moved again to Monday afternoon. So the vote is Saturday. The tag got moved to Monday. The free agency still begins March 18th. The tampering period stays the same, but for a lot of teams, they can't really figure out what they're doing without knowing if they can use both tags.
Yeah, I mean, and that's difficult, and that's why you get things pushed back. It's also why and how teams are trying to figure out to move forward with players that they want to keep on their squad and also with who they want to seek in free agency, and you're going to continue to get things pushed back, I believe, until you can solve this problem or until a solution is made and they know what they're moving forward with. And, you know, there are some teams with some good cap space, but there are also a lot of teams that need big-time players in important positions. And all of these things tie into the business of the CBA. They tie into the business of football in general. And I think for the first time in a long time, we have a good bit of quarterbacks that could be changing teams or that will be available. And many of these rules, whether it be transition tags, tenders, franchise tags were made to keep quarterbacks in place. And so I'm sure there are many teams who are interested in knowing, will they have the two tags to move forward with, or how will things have to proceed?
Yeah, the key is the two tags, right? Which is, by the way, there's like major uncertainty about this. I don't know why, like, nobody seems to have any idea what the actual rules are, or like the application. Like, last I read, they're saying teams can use both tags, but then if the CBA is, the new CBA is voted on, they're going to have to rescind one, which is freaking crazy to me, but.
Right. Which is hard. I mean, we've seen tags rescinded, right? Josh Norman got a tag rescinded, but I'm pretty certain that if these teams use these two tags, they did it for a reason.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
right? 100%. Like there are players they want to keep, and then you have the rescind one. How would you like to be the rescinded guy? You know what I mean? Or the guy that's kept, because nobody wants to play on this stinking tag. And so I'm sure you'll be hoping that, oh, man, they take the tag off and I go get some of this big money. And so, man, it's really just an entire – it's like we could talk about this all day and still have nothing figured out.
Tuesday and Wednesday are going to be crazy for us, by the way. It's just going to be madness. You mentioned the quarterbacks being tagged, right? Because the three teams I think of – that might use both tags are all teams with quarterback situations. The most prominent, of course, being Dallas, and we've talked about that endlessly with Amari and Dak. The Titans with Tannehill and Henry come to mind, and then I would say the Bucks with Jameis and Shaq Barrett, right? Am I missing any teams?
No, I think those are the three most probable.
What would you do if you – I've talked endlessly about the Cowboys. I've made it very clear what I think they should do. What would you do?
And what do you think they should do?
I think they
maybe
should,
you can give me some help.
Yeah, well, I think they should pay both Dak and Amari, possibly tag. They need a long-term deal with Dak. Pay Amari. I mean, I think they should have kept Byron Jones. I did not think they should pay a running back and an off-ball linebacker last year, but this is not the situation they're in right now.
So when I look at the Dallas Cowboys, I believe you have to try to find a way to make Dak Prescott happy. I don't believe franchising him makes him happy. I disagree with Byron Jones if Byron Jones is going to get set the market cornerback money.
He probably will.
I believe he's a really good player. I don't believe you can pay that type of money to a cornerback who doesn't get the football.
Woo! Okay, because this came up last week when I was talking about Byron Jones. God, I'm doing it again. I'm talking about the Cowboys. I promise this won't be long. But last week, Ryan, when I was talking about Byron Jones, I said he's good at everything except for interceptions, right? And then I was saying when you dig into his numbers, he still has like his passes, defense, his breakups, like he's getting in the mix. But you really feel like just if he's not getting the turnovers, he's not worth setting the market.
Yes,
you're
I do.
A DB, so you would know.
Yeah, I think that's what changes the game. I mean, you even look at a guy like Patrick Peterson, who actually gives up touchdowns. If you go through his numbers, he scored on pretty frequently, but he turns the ball over. And turning the ball over, you give offenses opportunities to score, you score points yourself, and those are also stops. So if you're a guy like Byron Jones and you get your hands on three or four balls and you catch them and you turn the ball over to your team, you've now changed games. The probability of winning football games when you turn the football over and win the football, win the turnover margin, it gives you such a greater chance to win games that I think that's valuable. I believe you pay for it. I believe it's tangible. Being a good player and stopping people from catching the ball puts you in a market to where a team needs you, a team wants you, a team will pay you, but they won't pay you top dollar. I think there's been a lot of times where we've seen cornerbacks get paid for turning the ball over and change games because they can turn the ball over. And Byron Jones just doesn't do that. He's a good player. He's actually a better player than I thought he'd be when he was drafted. I understand he's a Pro Bowler, but I don't believe he's an elite. Now, can he catch the ball? Yeah. If a couple of footballs hit him in the face, then it changes the game. But let's look at someone like Minka Fitzpatrick, who didn't get a ton of tackles once going to Pittsburgh, one, because they were amazing and they didn't have to, but he caught overthrows and he caught three tipped interceptions. On the stat sheet, doesn't say that. Doesn't say it was a bad ball by Ryan Fitzpatrick. It doesn't say it was a ball that hit a receiver in the hands and he intercepted. It says he got, what, 6 or 7 picks, and those things changed the game. They changed who the Pittsburgh Steelers were on defense, and that's valuable.
But that also has regression written all over it, right? Because you're right. Some of those were...
From a monetary standpoint, from a production standpoint, it does. I said it myself during the season that I didn't necessarily love the trade, you know, because I didn't know where the pick would fall. And then when he starts to get these tip interceptions and overthrows, there's all the Steelers fans. Oh, you still hate it. You still hate it. I think he's a good player. But I did say to myself, well, I mean,
this is not happening.
Is he going to get 4 tips again?
Yeah, exactly.
Is he going? And it's possible. You know, it's possible, but you're going to have to do some other things. And so, you know, we'll see what happens with Byron Jones moving forward. He's extremely talented. He has played well in this league, but I still think it's hard to set the market with a guy who doesn't get the football.
I'd love to see, for those who are listening, some, like, academic work on this. Ryan, I don't know if you're up on the latest nerd trend, which is that pass coverage is more important than pass rush. That's where we are right now, statistically. But I'd love to see, because you can quantify, you know, expected points out of getting turnovers and how powerful that is. I would like to see, like, the comparing, I guess, turnovers versus more reliable coverage. I think that's something I'd like to dig into more, but not today, because we got to move on. We're going to talk about some of the teams that can spend a lot of money, and I think there's some interesting ones, and a lot of them do need quarterbacks or might be in that market. But first, we're going to take a quick break. As most of us have found out the hard way, getting into debt is easy, getting out is hard, especially if your credit score isn't great. Thankfully, now there's Upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that knows you are more than just your credit score and offers smarter interest rates to help you pay off high-interest credit card debt. Upstart goes beyond the traditional credit score when assessing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter rate. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit score. They believe in you. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate. Since it's just a soft pull, it will not affect your credit score. The hard pull happens if you accept the rate. The best part? Once a loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the very next business day. The next day. Over 400,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards or meet their financial goals. Free yourselves from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. See why Upstart is top-ranked in their category with a 4.9 out of 5 rating on Trustpilot. And hurry to upstart.com/Mina to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes. That's upstart.com/Mina.
Question. Question. Lenny. For your thoughts.
As always, thank you for the excellent questions you guys leave in your reviews. Keep in mind that my mom reads all of them, so please, no profanity, nothing dirty in there. Ryan, first question. This is a very serious one. CK Action Hero thinks that it sounds like my theme song is saying Kool-Aid. It's not. It's saying bootleg, because that was the original name of this podcast. But then someone else had a podcast named Bootleg, and they contacted me, so I had to change it. They want to know my favorite flavor of Kool-Aid. It's cherry. It's the only right answer.
Well, that would just be red, though, right?
It's like red, yeah.
Yeah, because see, you know, where I'm from, in New Orleans, we don't really call them by the flavors. There's red, there's purple. Orange just happens to also be the flavor, so that works out if that's what you're picking. And now red can also be tropical. It can be fruit punch. And so there's many things that go into that. So you need to be extremely specific when you're saying cherry. Because cherry probably is not my favorite.
Fruit punch, I feel like, always stains your mouth when you drink it. I don't know why only fruit punch does that. You get the, like, Joker smile when you drink it.
It's definitely the most red.
this question comes from a guy whose handle is a winking face. He wants to know who I think the best middle linebacker in the NFL is. Do I still think Bobby Wagner? Well, I was always like trading off between Wagner and Kuechly. Wagner, you know, he's still in the mix. I would say I'd love to hear your take on this. I would say right now, who balled out last year? Eric Kendricks was really good. Leonard's in the mix. He's kind of a will. Am I missing anyone? Keekly's obviously gone now.
I agree with you. For many years, it was the Bobby Wagner, Luke Keekly competition at the top for me. A guy who's entered the competition, especially last year, was DeMario Davis.
I thought he had just a phenomenal year. Perpetually underrated.
Yeah, and I think he's been trending upward in the recent years, but I believe that this year he just took an extra step, whether it be pass coverage, rushing the quarterback, playing the run. I thought he was amazing. I think the thing that continues to keep Bobby Wagner near the top is his ability to freaking tackle.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I think to people that seems very simple that I say that, but he doesn't miss tackles. He also doesn't give up many yards after contact. And in the game of inches, to have a middle linebacker who can play, one, the zone drops as well as he plays them, but have vision to break, get his hands on footballs, and tackle so well is huge. So to me right now, I would say my two favorite are Bobby Wagner and DeMario Davis.
That's a great pick, DeMario Davis. He was good on the Jets too, man. They should not have let him go. Yeah, I like Corey Littleton a lot. I mean, he's not in that mix, but he should get paid.
No, yeah, Corey can go. I think for me, anytime I see a guy's progression, it's always exciting.
Yeah.
Right? You watch a guy be a special team standout, also be a special team standout while playing extremely well at the while earning a starting spot at the middle linebacker position. That's very difficult.
Undrafted.
I mean, I was the personal protector and the starting free safety. I dang near died every game running down there and having to go. I used to pray for TV timeouts. And so for him to do that, I think, is huge. The type of plays he can make, especially in the pass game.
In coverage.
Is amazing. So he's a guy that should get big money.
Yeah, he's not quite there with run defense, but he's excellent in coverage. Gabe Rosner is a big Jaguars fan, and he wants to know, he feels very disrespected and wants to know why they feel the need to play two games in London. I can answer that in one word, money. I'm not really sure there's another answer for that. and you're right to feel. I mean, that would stink. I'd be bummed if I was a fan. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think when Jacksonville's ownership looks at it, that's what it's about. I think it's short-sighted in a sense because there are fans like him who want to see his team play, who wants to have opportunity to at least see seven home games, which they had been used to having. But, you know, the almighty dollar speaks louder than the fans. They can't hear the fans screaming over the money counting machine. And so as long as they find ways to get money, as long as they find ways to continue to grow as business owners, they're going to do that. These dudes don't get rich caring about people they don't know. That's not how it happens. And so do I think it's sad? Yes. But as long as they got opportunities to get more green, they're going to take it.
DJ523 wants to know who helped their draft stock at the combine. So as always, we're going to have a ton of draft coverage as we get a little bit closer after free agency. There's a lot of names you could give. I mean, shoot, some of these offensive linemen are freaks. Like, I could not believe what I was seeing out of the tackles in this class. Obviously Ruggs tore it up. We're just talking about the big names. I think Lamb jumped Judy for a lot of people. CeeDee Lamb jumped Jerry Judy. And I've gone back and forth, Ryan, on those two a bunch. I was team Judy, but now I'm kind of wavering.
You know, when you look at that situation, CeeDee Lamb was a guy that I think was extremely consistent throughout his career at Oklahoma. Jerry Judy has this amazing sophomore year in which he wins the Biletnikoff, and then he fell off a bit. I mean, obviously, I'm an LSU Tiger. If he doesn't drop two touchdowns, then Joe Burrow is not undefeated. The Louisiana State University football Tigers may not be the national champions, and that wasn't something we had seen from him. Obviously, people are kind of all over the short shuttle, which is 4.53.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily that interested in it because the dude can stop and start on a dime. I think CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Judy went into this thing very even. They ran about the same, but I believe CeeDee Lamb's body control throughout the drill. Some of the catches.
That one catch.
Some of the catches he was able to make, the fluidity in which he gets in and out of cuts was really on display for all to see. And if you were one of those people who went in thinking CeeDee Lamb was the better receiver, or you were one of those people that went into the combine thinking that they were about even, I believe CeeDee Lamb is now on the top of your draft boards.
We're going to need more comps for him than New Hopkins, because it's going to be boring after a while. I got a weird comp for Judy, okay? I don't think people are going to agree with this, but the reason I love him so much is I finished my wide receivers last week. I think he's the best route runner I've seen, like, of the last maybe, I don't know. I mean, I've not been doing this for a long. So to that end, when he runs, he kind of reminds me of Antonio Brown. I know Antonio's a lot smaller. I know, but something about his stop start and the way he runs routes just reminds me of him.
And this is going to be probably too simplistic, and you're going to be like, Ryan, you got to work harder. The only two guys to me, I was on the team when Antonio, came to Pittsburgh, but the two guys from a route running standpoint who I think were in Jerry Jeudy's category and maybe better route runners were the last two first rounders to come from his school. Amari Cooper and Calvin Ridley are professional route runners.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know as much about Keenan Allen and Devontae Adams coming out of college because obviously with those guys, going to Cal and TCU, I didn't know much about them or didn't study them as much or see them as much as I saw Amari and Calvin, because I'm obviously very interested in Alabama, but those dudes can run routes. Jerry Jeudy is obviously faster than Keenan Allen, but from a route running perspective, that's who he reminds me of. Also, Devontae Adams. If you look at Jerry Jeudy, there is a lot of hesitation. There's a lot of stemming into this route. There's a lot of leverage baiting where he's trying to out-leverage you to the way he wants to go, or leverage you in a point to where he's setting you up for his next cut. And if you watch Devontae Adams, if you watch Keenan Allen, those guys are very much like that. And they're also the longer receivers, to whereas Calvin and Amari, who are both excellent route runners. I believe like all those dudes are from Florida too, if I'm not mistaken. And Florida has this like cult following of footwork guys where they're always on footwork ladders and working these different setup drills. And so I think that all of those guys are very similar. I don't believe he's like Antonio, because I think the thing that Antonio Brown does differently than Jerry Jeudy does is create separation in his cuts. I think Jerry does a great job of losing people, but when Antonio comes out of a break, he comes out of it full speed. It's like he is riding on the back of the motorcycle that RG3 is driving. And so I think that would be the one difference to me.
God, Alabama and these wide receivers, man. I mean, it's really remarkable when you kind of stand back and look at some of the guys over the last few years. Forget the last few years. When you look at this class and you realize that Jalen Waddle wasn't even, like, it's just bonkers.
Devontae Smith, probably the top receiver this year on that team, you know, he's still in school as well.
Does it make it hard for you to evaluate Tua at all? Because I think Tua does his ball placement, like, for me, negates a lot of it, right? It's not like CeeDee Lamb, for example, where they're doing a lot of the work, but good Lord. I mean, he's never going to play with, relative to the competition, a group like that again.
So here would be the only, I guess, statement to play devil's advocate. Then what do you think about Joe Burrow?
Yeah, I know he's got some pretty nice wide receivers. I mean, they both place it perfectly to me. Not perfectly.
No, they can. I think they can both really throw it. I think they both give their wide receivers opportunities to make plays. But I venture to argue that if Ja'Marr Chase isn't a sophomore, we're speaking of him along with Jerry Jeudy.
1,000%. 1,000%. I'm completely in agreement with you. Yeah.
But then Justin Jefferson has an opportunity to be a first rounder. I think he will be, especially after running low 4.4 at the combine. And Terrace Marshall Jr., who was injured early on in the season, was leading the team in touchdown receptions before being injured. And I have a 7-on-7 team here. Both Jamar and Terrace Marshall played for me. Terrace Marshall Jr. was the number one wide receiver in the country when he was recruited to LSU. And so you look at some of these quarterbacks that goes to the that go to these schools that can recruit these 5 and 4 stars, they're never going to play with wide receiving cores that have the type of talent gap that they played with in college. And so I think that's going to have to be a part of your evaluation. Yeah. You know, it's like looking at a guy like Patrick Mahomes and now pairing him with the type of wide receivers that he has in Kansas City. Nobody knew that this was going to be that dude at Texas Tech. And so I think it's all about fit, opportunity, but you have to be able to watch the film and say, okay, here's the ball placement. Here's him escaping the rush, getting outside of the pocket, making the right reads and making the throws, putting footballs into places that you need to. And I think both of those guys have done a lot of that throughout the last couple of years.
That's how I feel watching them, right? I don't feel like they're getting bailed out and helped sometimes.
Absolutely.
But, well, that's a good segue, actually, to the first team I want to talk about. So I went through, and we've got the 5 teams at the most, but I took out the Wait, sorry, one second. Let me pull it up right now. Teams, salary cap space. Okay, so these are the teams with the most space right now as of Tuesday, and we've got the Dolphins, the Colts, the Bucks, the Bills, and the Giants. And the team I meant was the Dolphins, since we're having this quarterback conversation. I'm talking about Tua. Although, Ryan, like, I start my process, and this is also what I do ahead of the draft, is, like, I'm going through every team, writing down the team needs, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Dolphins need everything. Like, there's just not a position they don't need. I mean, there's a couple, maybe, like, safety. But, like, I would say, yeah, maybe, let me pull it up. I mean, how many guys on the Dolphins are even, like, guys you can build around at this point?
I mean, if you look at the team, you think, you know, Devontae Parker steps up last year, shows you he's the first-round guy that you drafted.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you can't build around a quarterback because he's my age, but I still love him.
Well, he matters, though, in the terms of, like, the quarterback question, like what they want and how whether they need to play him.
Right, and I think he gives you some patience in getting a quarterback. You want, and I don't mean like you wait a year, but if you do go to a Tagovailoa, you don't have to rush him back because Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to play hard. He's going to play with energy. He's going to make people around him care, make people around him work. And so I think they have that. You give Xavien Howard the huge contract.
Yep.
What is it, 2 years ago? And I don't necessarily know if he was worth that. But if we think about it, Mina, remember, he got the football.
He did, you know, and then he regressed last year.
And did he regress?
So, you know,
and so,
but yeah, he's
so
there. Like, he's not going anywhere.
Right, and so he's going to be there. But when you look at that team, there aren't many pieces, many young pieces that
I forgot
to
keep. DeLee was traded to Dolphins. I'm looking at that. That sucks.
Yes, you know, that you want to build a team around. So this team needs a ton. I think you have the draft picks to try to address some of it in the draft. I think you also need to get some of those not necessarily high priority free agents, but some of these guys in the middle of the pack with leadership that understand football, understand being good in this league and winning, and start to build a team in that aspect as well. And I think you already know that you have your coach.
Yeah, and well, speaking of that coach, you know, Flores, and being that he's from the Patriots, I imagine they're going to get linked to, oh, I forgot, Preston Williams. He's decent. Anyways, far receiver. I was just trying to think of, like, decent players on that team. I feel like they're going to get linked to, like, a lot of the Patriots, right, in free agency, like your Joe Thunies, your Kyle Van Noy's, your McCourty's. I don't know, to, like, come in and be tone setters. I mean, Thuney's still really good, but, you know, they've got so much money, so I feel like you're going to see that. If you were them, Ryan, so, like, I think you would agree, you know, probably going to go for Tua. Would you break the bank for one of the big money pass rushers out there? And which one would you go for if you're the Dolphins?
you know, I don't – like we talked earlier about pass coverage being more important. This wasn't a team that created a ton of pressure on the quarterback, and so I necessarily wouldn't break the bank right now for a pass rusher. I just believe that you need more pieces.
You'd build from the back end? Because that's what the nerds like it, now.
I would build it from the back end. I think the hard part in that is when you look at teams that change the trajectory of where their defenses were going. Let's go to the Super Bowl winning Kansas City Chiefs. Mm. I don't know if there was a bigger piece on that team outside of Patrick Mahomes other than Tyrann Mathieu. You also go to the Pittsburgh Steelers building from the back end. Now, don't get me wrong. T.J. Watt is a freak show, right? Mm. And he made a ton of plays. He was up for Defensive Player of the Year. But they add Mika on the back end, and it wasn't just the playmaking ability, but kind of some of the stability he gave them from a leadership and standpoint and also an alignment and assignment standpoint that made that team better. So I think if you're Brian Flores, if you are the Miami Dolphins, you want to build and find a way to get a pass rush, but I don't necessarily know if you go out and spend money to get some of those top guys in when you just need so many pieces, especially looking at a team like the Dallas Cowboys who go get Robert Quinn, and he actually becomes the better pass rusher over DeMarcus Lawrence last year after you already pay him. And so I just think you got to be very careful about going out and getting some of these guys who just get after the passer thinking that's going to change who you are as a defense.
I love Robert Quinn, and I want my Seahawks to get him. I think he's going to get more money than we think, though. I think we're thinking, you don't have to pay him Jadeveon Clowney money. He'll take like $9 million. I think he's going to get – because I'm obsessed – Ryan, he's 29. Isn't that so weird? Shouldn't he be way older than that?
I feel like he's been in the league forever.
Yeah, that's my feeling, too. Whenever I see he's 29, it's upsetting to me.
Right, like you look at him and you think of being with Chris Long and these different things.
Totally.
You feel like you've seen him for a long time. He's also dealt with some injuries, some setbacks.
Yeah, that's why.
But when I was watching the Dallas Cowboys last year, he was one of the more impressive players on that
team. Oh, he was excellent. He ranked very highly in our pass rush. I think he was the number one pass rush win rate guy per ESPN's.
Excellent. And I can believe it. I mean, he was just flat out whipping cats. There were times that tackles weren't even out of their stances, and he was more DeMarcus Lawrence last year than DeMarcus Lawrence was from a monetary standpoint and production. And so I think he's going to get paid. And if he's going to get paid top dollar, you don't bring him back to Miami. I just don't think that's what happens this year.
He was on the Dolphins in 2018. I totally forgot that. I think it's because he was – anyone who played in the Edward Jones Dome, I assume, is old. Like, there's something about having played in that stadium where you're like, you're not still in the league. And yet he is, and he's very good. I think, with the Dolphins, the issue is just picking your spots because you got a ton of money. I think there's a good chance they're going to have to deploy a lot of their draft picks to move up and get Tua. So I think you could see some of those picks disappear very quickly. So for them, it's like, okay, you got to rebuild your offensive line. It's a freak show tackle draft. You got to get pass rushers. You also got to rebuild your secondary. Like, what are the spots you're going to pick? And I think, as you said, like, who is going to be the leader on your defense? It's challenging for them. They need a running back too. I don't know. I think a lot of it is going to kind of emanate out from their draft plan. If they are really set on getting to and using those draft picks, I think that's going to impact what they decide to do in free agency. There aren't tackles in free agency, by the way.
And you look at it, whether it's, you know, if Barrett gets the opportunity, we'll see what, you know, what the tag.
Well, we'll get there, actually. The Bucks are on our list. Sorry, we'll get to Barrett.
Yeah, you know, Barrett and, you know, whether it's Fowler, Chris Jones, Armstead. I mean, they're guys, but once the tags are deployed, who goes away?
I would love Chris Jones if I were them.
I think that'd be a great fit. And see, I think that's a guy you spend money on.
Me too.
Because he's interior.
Well,
right?
You're going to say picks on him,
right,
too.
You create interior pressure, which I just think is different than going out and getting an edge rusher that you could get 15 sacks, you could get 8. And if that's what his job is, if that's what he specializes in, are you getting enough or are you getting much more that makes you a better team, not only a better defense?
Right. I mean, are you getting like your Aaron Donald who's going to disrupt every play and do something, even if it's not necessarily right here?
Even if it's just draw five other – if it's just draw the whole entire offensive line to block him.
The next team is the Colts, another team that's in the quarterback market, most recently and most commonly linked with one Philip Rivers. They're picking at 13. So this is one where I think it's kind of like the opposite. Like, it all depends on whether they decide to sign Rivers. I'm for it, I suppose, because of the nature of the quarterback draft, Ryan. How do you feel about their quarterback position?
You know what's pretty funny, Mina? This is why I rock with you, even though you don't say hello sometimes.
One time.
I had to send something into NFL Live yesterday, and they sent me the free agent quarterbacks and their landing places, and Philip Rivers was Indianapolis to me. When I hear Chris Ballard speak about not reaching for a quarterback, trying to draft the best player available, and you look at where they draft, you expect the top three guys to already be gone. And this is the team, you saw how that they built their team through the draft, getting Leonard in the mid-rounds, building that offensive line with Stallworth first-round and early picks. And so it doesn't seem like a team that's going to want to go out and reach for a quarterback. And so you look at a guy like Philip Rivers, when you feel you have other things in place, I still believe they need weapons outside and they need to add there. But Philip Rivers is a guy who is one. He's a guy with experience. And if you're not going to have an opportunity to get one of those quarterbacks in his draft that can play right away on a team you feel is ready to compete, then you try to get Philip Rivers, see if you can get some of the turnovers down because you have some good players around him, and win football games and win them now. This is a team that was in the AFC Championship 2 years ago. And so they want to compete. They want to compete immediately. And I believe getting a free agent quarterback would be a way to do that.
Picture this. So the Colts have $86 million in cap space. They signed Philip Rivers. They use their 13th pick on CeeDee Lamb. They also sign an edge rusher. They could use some edge rush, I feel. They've got the money to do it. That's a really freaking good team right there.
It really is. No, I totally agree with you. I think this team is ready in so many different places. And I can be honest, I was one of those people hoping Jacoby Brissett worked out.
Me too.
And Jacoby Brissett turned into a franchise quarterback. And it wasn't just a couple-of-year extension, but it turned into a long-term deal. But when you're a team that's on the cusp of the Super Bowl and then you totally miss the playoffs, there's going to be some tense moments, right? There's going to be some, okay, look, we are right there. We have a window. We need to hit it now. And I think you got to go out and get a quarterback of some sort. You have to at least have some competition at that position. I mean, if CeeDee Lamb's there at 13, you take him. It should take you negative 10 seconds to get that card ready and get it signed, get that name on it, and have that guy in your building as soon as possible.
Yeah, they got a little bit of work to do. They got to extend, I think, a couple of their offensive linemen, Ryan Kelly, Costanzo. But I think that, like I said, they've had a ton of money. The next team, third team of five, is a team that I think is in a great position. That's the Buffalo Bills, $81 million in cap space. You know, I've criticized their quarterback over the years, but it cannot be denied that this team has done a phenomenal job of Bean and McDermott have done an excellent job of building that roster. I've always said most underrated secondary in football. And now they can be targeted. They've got money and they can be like super precise about filling needs. Ryan, my feeling is that they probably it's edge rush, and then I could see them adding maybe another weapon for Allen.
No, I definitely think you add another weapon. You need to create pressure on a quarterback. You go out. You get Josh Norman. Obviously, Tre'Davious White is a star. He's a stud on the outside. He's your number one corner. I think you have very good safeties in Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde.
So good.
Edmonds is an absolute stud.
Yeah.
at the linebacker position. I mean, he looks like a tall, rangy basketball player who's just mean as hell. And so when you can have those type that type of production on the back end defensively, if you can get rush, I believe it helps, obviously. Josh Allen does need weapons. Josh Allen also just needs to be better. Rookie running back last year in Singletary. Josh Allen made the plays he needed to make with his legs. I think some of the inaccuracy downfield, some of the decision-making at times, which I thought he fixed for a stretch last season when the team played extremely well. If he continues to progress, and you get him someone outside of John Brown to help him make plays, I believe this is a team that not many are going to want to face and could be the team that takes over as the lead of the AFC East once Tom Brady or if Tom Brady decides to leave.
I had a thing last year where I would constantly tweet, John Brown is always open, because he was just always open last year. But I think they still need, you know, that X guy. And it's not a great free, assuming Amari and AJ Green stay, you're looking at like and I think there's news that Robbie Anderson's probably was working on something with the Jets. I don't really love that for them anyways. You'd be looking at like Emmanuel Sanders maybe. I actually, let me throw this out here and we can finish up with the Bills here. I actually kind of like the idea of them going after like a Hunter Henry, like a tight end, helping Josh like within that intermediate area. I think that's something where he took a big leap forward. His deep ball was still real rough until the end of the season, but he took a big leap forward in that intermediate area, not throwing fastballs all the time. And I think adding a tight end would help this roster.
Well, obviously, you know, that was the huge buzz about Cole Beasley coming there.
Yeah.
And it looked early on in the preseason like he was going to have 500 targets. And I think they kind of laid off of that as the season went along. I do believe adding the tight end helps, especially in the game we play now. Let's think about the two Super Bowl contenders or the two Super Bowl participants. You had the two top tight ends in the NFL, and those guys were huge parts of the passing game, also the run game. And so I believe if you find someone at that position that can be productive, it's a large part of offensive success in this era of football. But they do need help. I think he needs a security blanket. He needs an outlet. Yeah. He needs easy throws. To be frank, and however they have to find a way to do that and get that for Josh Allen, I believe it needs to be done, because if you think about it, what he's going into year three now, next year you have the opportunity to use the option going into the fifth year, but there's a deal that's going to need to get done with Josh Allen, so you need to start making the moves you can make while he's still on this rookie contract.
Two more teams. The next one is one where quarterback is very much up in the air. We mentioned them earlier. That's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Ryan, if you had asked me a month before the season end, I would have said no-brainer. They're rolling with Jameis, no question. I'm not so sure now. Obviously, some of that's because of how the season ended. I just feel like it was too much. You know what I mean? The whole 30 for 30 thing. And then there's just been kind of like all kinds of negative language coming out of Tampa Bay from Bruce Arians. So, and then we're hearing rumors like maybe Teddy, which is hilarious, the idea of Teddy in a Bruce Arians offense. What would you do if you were Tampa Bay at the quarterback position?
Teddy and Bruce Arians doesn't seem like a mix to me.
I mean, it's insane. It's insane. Bruce would lose his mind. The second he would take a check down, Bruce would just throw his
A check down Charlie and a throw it deep Donald, like those dudes don't work together. But Jameis is just one of those people that I just keep waiting for him to be better. Like I keep waiting for him to get rid of the mistakes because I just enjoy watching him play. I tweeted it out during the season. He has the incredible and unique characteristic of being able to keep both teams in any game. And I kind of love it. Obviously, if you're coaching him, you hate it. But, man, it sure is entertaining.
You know who hates it? Todd Bowles. That's who hates it.
He probably hates it more than anybody.
Especially with that defense getting better. And he's like, damn it, my defense is better than everyone thinks, and you keep making it so hard for them.
Don't you think it's hard to move on from Jameis if you don't necessarily know what you're going to get or who you're going
to
get?
That's the question, yeah.
And Teddy Bridgewater doesn't feel like a fit to me. when you look at the Bruce Arians offenses, they're better when Carson Palmer is healthy in Arizona, or when Big Ben Roethlisberger is rolling in Pittsburgh, when you have Mike Wallace and the Bugatti boys on the outside. And so it's going to be interesting to see where they want to move. I agree with you. The 30 for 30 thing was extremely difficult. It's hard for a team to bring back a quarterback that throws 30 interceptions and throws them in the ways that he does.
I know, it's
who, ends, who gets 30 on a pick six.
The flair, the first, you know, he's like, oh my God. The one thing I do think now after thinking about this quarterback market and like this musical chairs, Jameis kind of looks like the odd man out, right? Like if you even think about Tampa Bay moving on from him, it's actually pretty hard to find a destination for him. That makes me think they might be able to get him cheap or like on a 1 year to whatever, just because I don't think there are good options for him out there. I think he would very much prefer to stay and keep playing with Chris God, that's G-A-W-D, Wynn, and Evans, and you know, in that offense. And so I think they might be able to keep him cheap. They got other stuff to do. As we discussed, they got to pay Shaq Barrett. I think they will. I'd roll with JPP if I was them. He was pretty good last year. And then I think the tackle position is probably the next big priority for them, the offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, part of it was protection as well. But when you look at the production from a statistical standpoint of the wide receiver core with Jameis, and you take away the interceptions, which are him, you know, you look at this team and you're like, shoot, if you can just stop turning it over, bro.
Dude, Chris Godwin is so good. I think he's like sneakily become one of the best players in the NFL. I don't think he's talked about that way.
Who's that?
Chris Godwin. I think he's so good.
Oh.
He's so good.
He's a monster. He made plays. He was physical. There were yards after the catch. There were deep balls. And I think because of Evans, he's sometimes overlooked.
And open.
But he's also very open. But like I want to say something smart about Jameis and know and have an actual idea of what to do. But, I mean, I feel like I can be frank with you, Mina. I don't know.
He's crazy.
Like, I am truly confused as to what decision they'll make.
Total chaos. Last team is not going to do anything at quarterback. That's the New York Football Giants. For needs, I have the entire defense. How do you and tackle? But first and foremost, literally every level of this defense needs more talent right now.
I mean, the Giants are terrible. you get DeAndre Baker, who I think can be a good player. Late first round pick last year was picked on. You get rid of Janoris Jenkins. Peppers is hurt at the safety. You're probably going to get not have Antoine Bethea back. You don't have pass rush. You don't have backers.
You have nothing.
I mean,
nothing.
This is a team that has to find a way to spend all the money they can possibly spend and hit on draft picks, not only early, but late in draft. And so I don't think that this team finds a way to be good. I do like their quarterback. I believe Daniel Jones has a ton of upside, but both offensively and defensively, they have to grow. They have to make moves. And this is a 2 or 3 year project to me. Mm. This is not something that gets solved in one spring.
Yeah. It's just at every level in this defense, from top to bottom. I mean, I could see them going out and paying one of those. They have money, right? We're talking about teams have money. I mean, their sack leader was Marcus Golden, who's a free agent. I'd move on from that. I think they're probably going to have to pay someone. And in the draft, where they're picking, I mean, we'll see how this all shakes out with Tua. I wouldn't be surprised if they go tackle. They can move on from Nate Solder. It's like a $13 million hit, but Remmers is a free agent. Like, the only player, I think this wide receiver group is a little underrated, to be honest. I make no secret of my total passion and love for Darius Slayton. But I also think Shepard and Tate, Tate might be a free agent, actually. But in any case, that's not what I'm prioritizing if I'm this team. I'm prioritizing everything on defense and then tackle. I don't know what happened to DeAndre, but he got a little bit better as the year went on, but Ryan, he was not good.
No, he wasn't. I mean, he was a guy in college who, another guy, wasn't a ball guy, but he was a sticky defender, great in press coverage. He tackled he was targeted constantly. And I believe you'd get that when you're a rookie, no matter how high you're picked. You know, you're the new guy. They're going to make sure, they're going to see what you got. And he was picked on, and he didn't play well. But you don't just move on from your first-round pick at corner in 1 year. You know, you try to get him to adapt to a defense. You try to give him help. You try to help him with technique. That's what it's about. So he needs to learn. He needs to be better. We have seen defenders improve in that manner. I think offensively, I do believe that when they got Golden Tate from Philly, they gave him a new deal, so I believe he'll be back. Sterling Shepard's health is important. And I also believe a healthy Saquon Barkley fixes some things. And so going into the next season, the priority has to be to find protection for Daniel Jones. Interesting fact, obviously, about the shoulder contract, being able to move on from it without taking too big of a hit. They just can't make those mistakes again. You can't say, okay, here's what we're going to do to find a solution and fix a problem, and it creates another problem, but in the same spot. They have to be able to move on. They have to find some building blocks for the future along with their young quarterback that they drafted in the first round last year.
All right, let's wrap up with a quick lightning round for you.
And now let's go. Time for dinks and dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
Ryan, give me an LSU draft prospect that I can be very excited about, obviously, other than Joe Burrow.
I think Justin Jefferson, and that's probably easy. But I believe Justin Jefferson is a guy who's going to be able to play inside and outside. And he's also one of those dudes that wasn't big time coming into college. He got one of the later scholarships. He had to grayshirt. Listen, they gave him number 37 when he got to school. So that tells you how they feel about him. And he was a dude who worked his way into the lineup, was the best receiver on the team as a sophomore. Obviously, with the emergence of Ja'Marr Chase, he wasn't the best last year, but other than CeeDee Lamb, no one else put up numbers like Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase did. And so I believe he's the guy that you go out and you plug him in to start day one. He definitely becomes your starting slot wide receiver. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he didn't run as well as I think people wanted to see him run, but he ends up being a Kevin Falk type. He ends up being the type of guy that plays in the pass game, that also runs the football. That's a perfect fit for what today's offenses do. He won't be a first rounder. He'll be a late second round guy, early third round guy. But he's going to be a dude that comes in and makes plays for you immediately. He's also great in pass protection, which is important in today's league. And so I think those two guys will be great. And Patrick Queen on the defensive side. Mm-hmm. I remember going into the championship, I said the winner of this game would be the team that wins the matchup of Travis Etienne, the Clemson running back, and the linebackers of LSU. And Patrick Queen absolutely showed out. Goes, he runs 4-5 flat at the combine, shows you that speed. I believe he's one of those guys that goes with, the Devin Smiths and goes with the Deion Jones and becomes one of those sideline-to-sideline former LSU Tiger linebackers.
I love Patrick Queen. I love him as a prospect. Question two, what is your hottest NBA take right now?
That LeBron James, and I'm taking age out of it. You know, I heard Jalen talk about it, and he said take age out of it. LeBron James is the greatest basketball player on earth, and we need to stop arguing about it. We need to stop fussing about it. We need to stop finding excuses as to why this man isn't flat out amazing and nobody is like him. We can't compare Giannis. We can't compare Kawhi, even KD, who I believe is one of the most talented offensive basketball players we have ever seen. LeBron James is different. To come in with those expectations, exceed them as a person, as a player, and to be playing the way he is now, still the best, not the best because he's 35, just the best basketball player on earth. And he had an opportunity against Kawhi and against Giannis in the matter of days to go at their heads. And if you've ever had a reason to not like LeBron, it was the competitive spirit to be a killer. But he showed that. And in showing that, he reminded the whole world that he's still the best player on the planet.
I think LeBron James is the best basketball player of all time, and I also think Giannis is the MVP this year.
No, I will agree with you on that. I
oh, really?
Giannis
okay.
Also,
okay, cool.
I believe right, Giannis is the MVP.
All right, good.
You know, I don't think we get to hedge our bet there and say, because the MVP is not about who's the best player, because in that case, LeBron would have 10. Steve Nash would have none. And Kobe Bryant would have those.
Who's the most valuable in a single season? That's all.
You know, it's about who's the most valuable in a single season, and Giannis is that.
Oh, you got a lot of good opinions, Ryan.
I just agree with you when I'm on your show, and I know that'll
like
work.
Yeah, I like it. Question three. So you're in Louisiana. You're near the Saints. What the hell's going on with this Taysom Hill thing? Like, is Sean Payton just so committed to the bit now, so committed to the troll that he can't back out of it?
I feel like he said it behind closed doors too much, and people started to say it publicly. You know what I mean? Like, you know, so you've been in these meetings before, Mina. You have these production meetings, and the play-by-play and the color people, they ask the coaches questions, and they always say great, glowing things about their players, right? And so we started to hear these things out loud. Like, the only thing that about Taysom Hill and Steve Young that are alike is the school they went to. That's it. He ain't Steve Young. You know why? Because if he was Steve Young when Drew Brees was hurt,
he would have used him. He would have used. Also, beyond that, he barely used him separate from that. 264 snaps on offense, Ryan. 264 snaps.
No, listen. I am confused by it. I think, I don't know if it's the folklore. I don't know if it's the excitement of having a player that can do so much and it has done so much that you feel you owe him. But I think the bit is getting old, and I think if played the wrong way and given too much money and making too much commitment, the bit can hurt the team.
Well, here's the thing. If Peyton actually believes in him, he'll be the backup, right? Like, let us know by not going out and getting another backup quarterback. Like, if you really want this guy backing up Drew Brees, show us with your wallet. And I believe they're going to get another backup. So,
well, I mean, show us with your wallet. Also, it'll be you, like you said, not getting another quarterback. But when you make that statement that he's the backup, I feel like you make the statement that he's the quarterback of the future,
right,
as
exactly,
well.
Exactly.
And yep, that's what I want to see.
Question number four. Have you ever had a mustache?
Like just a mustache?
Yeah, like no beard, just a mustache.
I've always had at least like a little goatee. Like, it just connected though, probably like 4 or 5 years ago, and it's still spotty in the beard, but I'm definitely not going to just rock the skinny Mississippi mustache.
Have you ever thought about it?
Say what?
Have you ever thought about it?
No, because my dad wears it, and I always saw it as old man.
I get that.
And so I'm going to kind of try to stay away from it, at least until I feel old. Maybe then I'll do it.
You have daughters, right?
I do. Two of them. Okay. 21 and 15.
Well, question number five is, I don't know how Lenny knew that. That's my dog. I guess he was looking at your Instagram. He follows you. and he has a question. His question is always from him. Lenny wants you to know, he loves your fashion sense. He especially loved the giant velvet bow tie you wore around Christmas time, and he wants to know if you stole it from one of your daughters.
I didn't steal it from one of my daughters, but my oldest did really like it, if that makes Lenny feel any better.
I liked it too, Ryan. I thought it was really fashionable.
Well, thank you.
It's very fashion forward.